Today is February 8th, 2017, and this is episode number 397 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I write love letters. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
You write the love letters that make all the girls sing.
Let's go with that. I like that. Seems pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Seems pretty. You know what else I've been doing? I've gotten into fountain pens and dip pens. I think we've mentioned that. But then I've also really gotten into sealing wax and sealing wax stamps.
You know, you are just so retro with your communication tools.
Or something. Yeah. I have been like poring over sealing wax stamp sites and sealing wax sites.
You have
companies that are selling,
So,
anyway, I just thought I'd share.
So now whenever you write letters to Dearest Matilda from the war front, you can end with your stamp. And it would be like, and that is the news from the war front, my dearest Matilda. Yours, B. Just like that.
I love your Brian writing from
the war front,
from the war front, possibly somewhere in Africa.
Yes.
During some colonial war. Anyway,
P.S. please send saltpita.
All right. I'm just going to go off on massive tangents. So we have a sponsor this week.
Oh, sweet.
I'm getting a Blue Apron delivery this week on Friday. I'm so excited about it. It's Blue Apron. They're sponsoring us and they're sending me some delicious food that I'm going to turn into delicious meals.
I'm getting a delivery next week. I had to postpone, even though I really wanted to eat some of their food, because I'm going to be out of town this weekend. But now I have something to look forward to next weekend.
Good. Excellent. Yeah, I'm super stoked. But we're going to talk more about that somewhere in the middle of the show, because that's what we do.
Yeah. Well, if we make the show really short, it could be right now.
That would be the middle of the show. Yeah, and everyone might appreciate that.
It's possible.
They're like, yeah, why don't you just go ahead and do that, Jeff and Brian? And that's this week's Apple. All right. So I've got a piece right now as we speak. I have a piece in our publishing system waiting to be pushed. I'm going to push it in the morning, Thursday morning.
Are you going to push it? Push it real good?
I'm going to push it well, very well.
Are you going to make it quick, or I'm going to get pissed?
So yes, I am. By the way, you know that always to me always made me think it was a Gary Newman riff that was being sampled, but I don't think it was.
I don't think it was either.
Doesn't it sound like one though? Doesn't it sound like that could be a Gary Newman riff?
You know, now that you say it, yes, I can totally hear that.
iBooks is the topic.
Oh, not salt and pepper?
Not salt and pepper. iBooks. iBooks is the topic. So I've got this piece. It's going to go up on Thursday morning as of this writing, as of this speaking, as it were.
And as of this writing through our mouths?
Yeah, writing through
audible
our mouths.
Audible writing?
It's this thing we do. And it is based a bit on, it sparked. It was encouraged by a piece that Daniel Steinberg of Dim Sum Thinking, self-publisher essentially of Tech Help Books, mm-hmm. Well, actually, they are a publisher, but they're doing the publishing themselves. They're not part of a larger company, so they're not self-publishing. They are publishers, but they write some of the books themselves.
Okay.
Right. Tim's on thinking. Anyway, he wrote a piece saying that Apple, basically that iBooks isn't loved by Apple. And the thing is that he's right. This is an interesting topic to me. It's iBooks. I love iBooks. Right, let's start there. I love iBooks. iBooks to me is better than Kindle when it comes to the reading experience on my iPad.
Right. So in this moment, you're talking about iBooks, the app, the ebook reading app for iOS and macOS.
Yeah, but I'm also talking about the broader iBooks ecosystem because that's part of the experience.
Okay, sure.
It starts with the app for sure. But you know that the app is on my iPad. It's where I read all my books these days. I don't as much as I love printed books. Seriously love printed books. I read all my books on iBooks these days, unless I have to read a book that I can only get on Kindle, which unfortunately does happen.
Sure. And here I am. And I just got a print book.
Sure. Well, didn't we? What John wrote about last week, didn't he? He wrote a story about how for the publishers, printed books re-overtook ebooks.
True. You know, we talked about it on Daily Observations. The book that I bought, it's a book that's only available as hardback. It's a special edition of Wind in the Willows. And which, by the way, is a wonderful story. And it was illustrated by David Peterson, who's the amazing artist that does Mouse Guard.
So okay.
How could I not get this book? I actually pre-ordered it like a year ago, and it came out. And it showed up. It was like a surprise. I'd forgotten about it. But the point is, not available as an ebook. So I have this beautiful hardback edition of Wind in the Willows with David Peterson's art in it. It's magnificent.
That's fantastic. Now, an interesting thing is that Apple has actually been leading the way with quote unquote enhanced versions.
This would be a really great candidate for an enhanced ebook.
Right. Which, you know, is funny. I don't think I've said this anywhere, but Apple offering enhanced iBooks is the kind of thing that once upon a time we would have ripped Microsoft to shreds for embracing and extending as a way of subverting standards.
Right. Yeah. Because it's not like a universal standard. This is an Apple thing. It's a format that only works with Apple's iBooks app.
Right. So, I mean, okay. That said, Apple isn't embracing and extending a standard because iBooks was already its own standard. Right. iBooks also supports EPUB. Right. And iBooks, the iBooks you download are based on the EPUB standard, but they're not the EPUB standard. It is proprietary to Apple. So Apple's not really doing an embracing and extending here, but they're kind of doing an embracing and extending. And it just occurred to me several months ago that this is the sort of thing that we might have ripped Microsoft to shreds for trying to circumvent a standard. And at the same time, I can't tell if I've got a double standard on this or if Apple is truly not doing the same thing that Microsoft has always tried to do. Like we're going back to the late 1990s and in the early 2000s when Microsoft would take some kind of either a proposed standard or an actual standard and do something with it that you could only do in Internet Explorer.
You know, I think this is different because what Microsoft was doing with Internet Explorer was changing something for the sake of changing it. And it didn't change functionality typically. it just changed the way you made something happen.
Well, no, they did add features. They added usability. They added pretty doodads sometimes. There were things that Microsoft was doing that actually did make web pages better. Some of them weren't. Some of them were just obfuscation and just, you know, blatant. No, we're going to sort of slightly twist this so that every other web browser breaks.
Yeah, but some of them were command you have to support. Yeah.
Right, to do the same thing, right. But there were a lot of things they did that actually, there were interesting things that could be done only in an Internet Explorer browser. And we used to complain bitterly about Microsoft doing that. And Apple's doing the sort of the same thing, except for, again, they're not doing it off of standards. The platform is already proprietary, and there's nothing preventing the EPUB standard, which, by the way, is now merged with the W3C consortium. Mm-hmm. Right. So in fact, there's a lot of things that they may be able to do with the open EPUB standard to be able to compete against things like Apple's enhanced iBooks or anything that Amazon might do.
Sure. Yeah. Assuming they choose to go down that path. But yeah, they could. So, all right. So now, I'm not convinced that what Apple's doing with iBooks and their enhanced books is the same thing as what Microsoft was doing, say, with Internet Explorer, because it doesn't feel so much like there's this malevolent act that's being done to kill the rest of the market.
Right.
It feels more like Apple's doing this because there was a deficit that they felt they could remedy.
Right. And having these enhanced I think that the enhanced iBooks are a terrific thing.
I agree.
And there is, in fact, nothing preventing the other companies there's nothing preventing Amazon from doing it, and there's nothing preventing the EPUB standards group that's now part of the W3C consortium from doing the same kind of thing. So, all right. So anyway, that's a bit of a digression. I would love to hear from any readers who think we're either being completely double standard. We're exhibiting a double standard, or that don't think we are. Listeners, right? That's what we call them, listeners.
Listeners. Yeah. Yeah. If you think Brian has a double standard, let us know. ACM@MacObserver.com. Sometimes I'm horrible. Bus.
This bus smells really diesel-y from under here.
Yeah. I tried to get the interns to fix those leaks, but you know.
All right, so listen, iBooks is, in my opinion, it offers the best reading experience. Now, reasonable people can disagree, even if they're wrong. And,
yes.
At least on the iPad, right? I mean, because to be fair, Apple doesn't make a reader only. And there are certainly some wonderful things about reading an iBook. Something on my desk is vibrating. That seems alarming. The Kindle e-reader only and one of their e-ink devices. I mean, there's certainly some plenty of lovely aspects about reading on one of those. Mm-hmm. And there are people who don't like reading books on an iPad at all, and that's fine.
Apple doesn't have the whole market in ebooks. You can use whatever device you want.
Right. So for me, on an iPad, iBooks gives me the better experience, from page turning to actually having page numbers, a crazy, crazy concept, to the searchability features, the comment, highlighting and commenting that actually matters to me both as a reader and as a writer. From the layout of the books, the controls for changing the books, the things that I can control, all of those things make iBooks by far, hands down, not even close, the better reading experience on my iPad than, say, Kindle. Mm-hmm. And that's not touching the fact that Apple's library management is infinitely better than the nightmarish hell that is managing your library and getting books on a device through the Kindle ecosystem.
Yeah, and the book purchasing experience, I think, is much more fluid in iBooks.
Well, yeah, some of that's Apple's fault, though. Apple is, because Apple won't right? Apple demands 30% from book sales.
Right, and Amazon is choosing not to play that game.
Right, well, there are no margins. As many issues as I have with Amazon, there is not an extra 30% for Apple to also take. Right, which is one of the problems. And Apple has relaxed that in some regards, but for the time being, at the very least, right now, if you want to buy an iBook, you got to go do it through a browser, or do it through a Kindle Fire device.
You said iBook. I believe you meant ebook.
Thank you. If you want to buy an ebook from Kindle, you've got to do it through a browser. If you want to buy a Kindle edition, you got to do it through a browser. You got to do it through a Kindle Fire device. Although you may be able to do it through an Android tablet. LOL. Do they still make those?
Yeah.
Whatever. So, you know, those things are all things that where iBooks still rules the roost. And I say still because in reality, these things haven't changed much in years. It's like Apple has this lead, but it got this lead a long time ago and hasn't done anything with it.
Yeah, it does feel that way.
And that's the thing that Daniel Steinberg was talking about it's clear that Apple doesn't love iBooks, because we see this with Apple over and over again. A product is important, it gets shown, it gets rolled out, and then this was especially true when Steve Jobs was still with us. As soon as he wasn't paying any attention to it, it got no attention, it got no love.
Yeah. Yeah. He would drop a product like that.
Yeah. But it wouldn't necessarily be dropped.
Yeah. No, he would drop it personally. And then Apple was stuck with this abandoned product.
Yeah. And to be mostly pedantic, it's not so much that he would drop it. It's that his attention would move on to something else. That was the thing for Steve. Steve had a very narrow focus.
Yes, that's true.
Right. We have seen this since Steve passed away, too, under Tim Cook's leadership. We've seen other products languish. For instance, iWork, although I think Steve was ignoring iWorks and iLife, too. But iWorks and iLife haven't gotten any significant updates in a long time. GarageBand's actually gotten a few things.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess GarageBand has gotten some stuff. But they also took away key things, you know, like podcast production support.
Which is weird.
Yeah.
Really, really, really weird, but whatever. We've seen it with, of course, Macs. We've been ranting for months and months and months now about how Macs aren't getting iterated often enough or well enough, right? I mean, that seems like executive leadership just wasn't as focused on Macs.
Right.
So it's kind of the same thing as we saw with Steve Jobs, except for Steve did, you know, at least while he was still with us, Steve did keep paying attention to Macs, and he was paying attention to iPads. Seems like iPads aren't getting the love right now either. You know, we've gone from yearly updates on iPads to 15 to 24 month cycles on iPads.
Yeah, well, you know, and that may not necessarily be an indication an iPad isn't getting love. It may be that we're missing a key piece of information about why Apple is choosing to do longer upgrade
cycles. If iPhones can be updated once a year, iPads can be updated once a year.
Of course. Macs could be updated once a year. We could get a new Apple TV every year.
Yes, and we should. We should get those things. All right. Anyway, so we've talked a little bit about that.
Yeah, but if people aren't going to buy them. That quickly.
People are buying them. Look what happened in the fourth quarter, the December quarter. Apple releases a new MacBook Pro and boom, sales are up year over year when they've been down for the previous three quarters. Right? We joked about this last week. It was that Apple found that one weird trick for boosting Mac sales, actually release a new freaking Mac. Line.
I love that line.
Right? I'm still cranky about that. I'm still really, really. So anyway, so we've seen this same phenomenon. Apple has a tiny leadership team for the size that Apple is, for the numbers, for the sales that Apple generates. Apple has a very tiny executive leadership team. And there's only so much time and attention for these people. And, you know, on the one hand, that means that you've got a tight group of people making the decisions. On the other hand, that means that anything that's not in their immediate focus doesn't get the love. And I think that that's what we've been seeing with iBooks. More importantly, I think that we've seen this with iBooks since the DOJ's bullcrap antitrust suit against Apple.
I'm totally with you. That was a ridiculous lawsuit. And everyone that was following that case, from us to legal experts, everyone just seemed shocked that the DOJ was able to push their case through and that the courts agreed.
Okay, but that said, what's her name? Judge Cote.
Mm-hmm.
Judge Cote, very, very, very distinguished judge. She found Apple guilty, and the appeals court largely backed up everything she did. Not everything, but largely backed up everything.
Right. Yeah, the
backed
whole thing
up most of what she did.
Yeah, the whole court appointed monitor, that was really weird.
It was weird, and we don't get it. However, unlike some people, I do put weight behind the fact that the appellate process took place, and that the judicial process took place. I may not agree with it, but I have to assume that there's something I don't get, because it turns out I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah, or a judge. And I agree. There's something neither of us are getting, and a lot of other people aren't getting. And so Chaffin's razor applies here. There's a key piece of information we're missing.
Yeah, nonetheless, we don't like that lawsuit. We don't like the fact that Apple was found guilty of orchestrating a horizontal price fixing scheme in the face of Amazon's monopoly.
You know, maybe part of the problem is that when Apple went into the ebook market, creating the iBook store, they were willing to walk away from it before it ever launched. If they couldn't get book deals that they thought were reasonable.
Yeah, so, Apple wasn't going to go into this business if it had to compete on price.
Right. And so now maybe because the DOJ was able to push through what Amazon wanted, Apple's interest is very limited.
Well, and it was Steve that wanted to do this in the first place.
Right.
So Eddie Q was his point man in making it all happen, but he was doing so at Steve's behest. Steve thought it was important that Apple offer an alternative to Amazon on the iPad for ebooks. Mm-hmm. And since this lawsuit, so like here's what I think happened. I think that the leadership, when we had very specific reports coming out of Apple that the executive leadership team was angry about the suit and angry about its conviction and angry about the monitor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that anger resulted in eventually not caring as much what happened, because they were so frustrated with the situation that they eventually just stopped caring about it.
Yeah, I think that to some degree, following the outcome of that lawsuit from the DOJ, that Apple has shifted from let's be a market leader for ebooks to let's maintain what we need so that iPad and iPhone users have an easy way built in to get ebooks.
Right. So here we are today, and the platform has just sort of sat there. I mean, you know, it's not entirely forgotten. For instance, Apple, the enhanced iBooks, right? Apple brought the Harry Potter series to iBooks in the form of enhanced editions. And this was when J.K. Rowling had previously limited ebook sales to the Potterverse.
Right.
Pottermore.
Yeah, Pottermore. Yeah, her own site.
Yeah, Pottermore.com. And then Apple brought Song of Ice and Fire, the first book of which is called A Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. You've heard of it. They brought enhanced editions of that to iBooks too. The thing is, I don't know if there have been other enhanced books, and if there haven't been, there need to be. And if there have been, Apple needs to do a better job of promoting their existence.
Well, let's do a quick search and see what happens. Whoops.
Oh, that's crazy. It's just crazy.
I know. It's also crazy. I tried to make a new tab in Safari and minimized all the windows. Go me. Let's see what happens. That was not a sound effect. That's really my keyboard. Game of Thrones, Harry Potter, Game of Thrones, Harry Potter. Wow, that may be it.
Yeah, so Apple needs more of those. So there need to be a lot of enhanced editions, and it needs to not, well, I guess from a money standpoint, it's probably always only going to be the top books. So I bet Stephen King would happily work with Apple for some enhanced editions of some of his books.
Yeah.
I wonder if the Christopher Tolkien. Tolkien State would work with. There's lots of books. Apple needs more of these things. And Apple also, I regularly get email promotions for iBooks. And they are, as I put in my piece, they are enticing. I like them. Apple has also done several sales where they're you know, bringing together collections of books under a theme and offering them as a sale. That sort of thing is good, but I think Apple should probably do more of those. So there are some things where iBooks is still strong and either remain strong or where Apple has actually added to them. But, you know, for Apple, right, iBooks right now is a terrible platform for self-publishers. And self-publishing is kind of a thing, and it's going to remain kind of a thing.
I agree.
And in my opinion, Apple should make iBooks the premier platform for self-publishing. As it is right now, I know a lot of authors who either hate iBooks self-publishing, don't consider it, I had three things. I'm feeling a little bit like Rick Perry right now.
and a maniacal devotion to the Pope. For this, I'll go out and start over.
Hate it, don't bother with it, or worse, don't even think about it. That's what I put in my piece.
Now, there was a time when self-publishing wasn't even an option for the iBook store.
Yeah, that's true, but Apple did fix that.
They did fix that, but apparently they didn't fix it in a fashion that self-publishers are overly excited about?
No, it's difficult, and it's more difficult than it needs to be. And start like iBooks, for instance, the iBooks author app makes beautiful books, but it's a pain in the butt to use. I've experienced this myself when I helped a self-publisher put together a poker book. It was a pain.
So and that was it easy?
Yeah, it was not even a little bit easy.
Oh.
And I have had authors complain about it to me, about it being miserable. A friend of mine who is a teacher talked about how they moved away from the iBooks platform for content that they were generating internally in the private school that she works at. And that had an ancillary effect of, because they were no longer tied to iBooks, They want to they want to generating ebooks for their internally created content. But since they were doing ebooks, they ended up allowing Surfaces into the school for their one-to-one initiatives.
Oh, because they weren't locked into iPads anymore.
They weren't locked into iPads. And I mean, that's you know, these things have repercussions. That's just one school, and it's a private school. So, you know, with at least some amount of money, so it's not necessarily representative. But my point is that Apple doesn't make it easy enough to do these things. And Apple should, you know, like reporting tools should be excellent. Daniel Steinberg, again, the fellow behind Dim Sum Thinking, he talked about how there's a service called Gumroad, which I was not familiar with. It's G-U-M Road.
It was new to me as well.
Right. I'd never heard of it. He was talking about how easy it is to push updates to his, the Dim Sum Thinking does nonfiction tech help books. And so like, if they're going to update a book, it's super easy. It's super easy to communicate with people that have, to let them know that there's an update. He gets immediate notifications of sales, which, you know, there are a lot of authors who want to know that sort of thing. There's just, you know, a lot of reporting features, a lot of content creation features, just a lot of aspects of iBooks does not make it easy to publish. And I know authors who don't do it, the self-publishing authors, they don't bother publishing to iBooks. And to me, that's a hole. Apple has all of the money in the world. Apple can make iBooks the premier platform for self-publishing.
And yet
here we are ranting. And, you know, and there's other things about iBooks too. Shopping for iBooks is not as good as it should be. In particular, like I got a screenshot in my piece, right? It's showing all the George R. R. Martin books.
Uh-huh.
Like, where are the sorting options? I can't sort by year. I can't sort by title. I can't sort by series. I can't sort by rating. I can't sort by language. So, like, you know, I'll end up seeing all these Spanish and German and Chinese translations of his books mixed in with the English ones, which is fine. I don't have a problem with those other languages, but I should be able to sort by language.
Yeah.
I don't want to buy a Spanish language version of the book. I don't read Spanish or Chinese or German.
What if you speak German only?
Yes.
You want to see the German versions. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there should be check marks for filtering. There should be sorting and filtering options. Like, I only want to see his 5-star books. I don't want to see his 1-star, whatever. I mean, there are no sorting options. And when you've got an author that's got a ton of books, that is a problem. I've experienced this myself many times when looking for books for a particular author. You should be able to sort by bloody series. Right. I should be able to find only the Game of Thrones books. I should be able to find only the I forget what Ace of Cards, Wild Aces. It's a series of short story books that he's been publishing he's been editing for a long time. You know, I should be able to see only his graphic novels within the Game of Thrones universe. Right. I mean, like, this is simple stuff. And you can't do it. You just can't do it. And Apple should fix that.
I should be able to sort by
price.
Well, Apple's always had a really difficult time with discovery.
Everyone has difficulty with discovery, but there are some things that have been figured out.
Right.
And Apple is slow to. And here's the thing: like all the sorting options we just mentioned, those aren't really so much of an issue for, you know, books, movies, apps, but they are an issue for books. And you know, so it's part of this sort of this reality that it seems like no one in Apple's leadership loves iBooks. They don't care, you know, and Apple needs an evangelist who has the power to do stuff, to be in charge of iBooks.
That would be really nice.
The power to do stuff being important. If no one on the executive leadership team wants to be that evangelist, then the executive leadership team should allow an evangelist the power to do stuff.
They should. Yeah, they need to do something. It didn't occur to me until we started talking about the whole ebook thing and iBooks thing today that I haven't, I have several books from the iBook store, but most of the books that I've purchased over the past year that are ebooks, I've bought from Amazon and I use in the Kindle app on my iPad because they were dramatically undercutting everyone else's prices.
Well, yeah.
At least for the titles that I was looking for.
Yeah, fair enough. I personally would rather pay for the reading experience. I know a lot of people are don't agree with that. My older sister was talking to me recently about how she didn't want to pay $14.99 for a new book that just bothered her.
You know, yeah. I'm okay paying what a book is worth. But actually, this is one of the reasons why I've been buying so many print books again. When you're charging more for an ebook than a print book, I have a really hard time justifying paying for that.
A lot of people do. And that was her point too. It's something like I want iBooks to thrive. I'm personally invested in it. I've got, I think, 99% of every book that I bought since about 6 months after the iPad first came out mm-hmm. has been an iBook. And I certainly don't want to see it go away. And I want to see it thrive. And if it's going to thrive, it needs love. And to get love, it needs an evangelist with the power to do stuff to be in charge of it.
All right, so Apple needs to hire someone.
Yes. I can't find the answer to the question I heard. Yeah, that's perfect. That is so perfect. That was so perfect.
That actually was. You know, we can't script something that perfect.
No, screw Amazon and screw having one of those devices listening to everything I say. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Oh, I shake my fist at my Echo Dot right now.
Right, you know what I don't shake my fist at?
What do you not shake your fist at?
Blue Apron, they are sponsoring us. That is so awesome. I love this company. I love that they're sponsoring us. I want our readers and listeners to go show them some love, too. And we've got a special offer that's coming from Blue Apron for our listeners that we'll tell you about in a second. So what Blue Apron does is they bring fresh food to your door.
To your drawer. They bring fresh food to your drawer.
You're not helping. They bring food to your door, and they're bringing exactly the ingredients you need to make a meal.
Not just a meal, but an awesome meal.
An awesome meal. I've made these meals. They're terrific. Upcoming, what do we have? Cashew chicken stir fry. I've got that coming this week with tango, mandarin, and jasmine rice. I cannot wait to make cashew. I cannot wait to make that. And more importantly, I can't wait to eat it. Roasted pork with apple, walnut, and farro salad. These things are coming to my doorstep. They could come to your doorstep too.
They could.
It's everything that you need to make that meal. It's the meat, if there's meat in the recipe, there vegetables, fruit, seasoning, the salt and pepper. Actually, use your own salt and pepper. They give you like this little bag. What do they call those?
Seasoning pouches.
Well, yeah, but it's a little extra thing. I can't believe I can't remember it. But anyway, they give you the extra stuff. It's all set aside for you. The quality of the produce is excellent. The quality of the meat is excellent. The quality of everything is excellent. You get a recipe card that is keepable. I mean, like high enough quality that I'm keeping them for my own little Blue Apron recipe.
When you say recipe card, I think you're actually doing Blue Apron an injustice because they're 8.5 by 11 sheets. They're high quality stock, glossy coated, 4-color printing, both sides. I mean,
yeah, with pictures of your steps, pictures of the ingredients, and very well written instructions on how to do it.
Yeah, it's really nice printed presentation to get you through the whole process. And I love that there's photos showing you everything along the way, including what each ingredient is, because I mean, they may very well include something that you've never tried before. And if you don't know what it is, and you're getting like multiple days worth of meals, you need to know the right thing to put into the recipe.
Right. So those recipe cards make it very, very easy to sort out what you need for the meal that you're cooking. I mean, listen, everything about my Blue Apron experience has been fantastic. And I'm hungry right now, to be honest. I'm hungry right now.
I get it.
I cannot wait for my Blue Apron stuff to arrive on Friday. I'm going to cook on Friday night. I'm going to have leftovers for that first meal on Saturday, and then cook my second meal on Saturday. I've got it all planned. I'm like super stoked and obsessed.
You know, I totally get it. And the meals cost $10 or less per person, which is nice.
Yep, it's super nice. And for listening to us and trying them out through us at blueapron.com/ACM, you can get 3 meals on your first order for free.
That's amazing. You know what would make it even better? If you didn't have to pay shipping.
Oh my God, guess what? You don't.
No way.
Yeah, free shipping. So check out this week's menu. Get your first 3 meals on your first order for free by going to blueapron.com/ACM. It's blueapron.com/ACM. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That is blueapron.com/ACM. Blue Apron. It's a better way to cook.
Om nom nom.
Yes, I am. Cannot wait. I seriously recommend that you try this stuff out.
Yeah.
Meaningful to me.
Since you're not going to get your food till Friday, you're going to have to make a boring meal between now and then.
I actually am, in fact, going to. Well, you know what? I could
use one of your recipe cards.
Yeah, I could. I have learned to cook things because of Blue Apron, which I love. Anyway, that's blueapron.com/ACM. Go do it. Go do it right now. That's what we're saying.
All right. So what else do we have to talk about?
Well, do we be those guys? Do we be those guys?
I'm afraid we're about to be those guys.
Yeah. So Samsung had a battery factory that caught fire. It caught fire. The factory caught fire.
You know what was in that battery factory?
Not people. Or if there were people, they got out safely.
The people were safe. No one was hurt. People got out of the building just fine. It had...
And we're not...
It had defective Note 7 batteries in it.
Seriously? Are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was actually in the battery? In the factory?
Yeah. So storage area. So it'd be like a waste storage area. Not like a cesspool, but like where you have the waste materials from the production process, you know, wrappers. So
theoretically going to be disposed of properly, theoretically.
Right. And so in that area, they had a bunch of Note 7 batteries. And they kind of caught fire. So they ended up with 19 trucks, 110 firefighters, and they were able to put the fire out. No one was hurt. And Samsung is saying it was a minor fire. And work at the factory is pretty much back to normal. And I'm thinking, so relatively speaking, if that's a minor fire where you have to have 19 trucks and 110 firefighters, what's a big fire for them?
How many firefighters?
110.
Okay, that's not a minor fire. Someone that is using alternative facts to describe a major fire.
Yeah, 19 trucks, 110 firefighters.
That's crazy. All right, so, first of all, thankfully no one got hurt. We would not be laughing about this if someone got hurt. Secondly, it's fun. I'm experiencing a lot of Schadenfreude over this.
So am I. And I'm fully aware that we shouldn't invite bad karma, and I'm fully aware of this because one of our readers pointed that out. They're like, yeah, don't invite bad karma. But nonetheless, Schadenfreude.
Yeah, but here's the interesting thing. I made a point a long time ago, I think a couple years ago now, I started accusing Samsung of having delusions of software relevance, delusions of relevance and delusions of software relevance. Like Samsung thinks that it's a platform and it's not. They're an Android in the smartphone market. They're an Android OEM. They matter just as much as any other Android OEM. They just happen to have top market share in the Android space for now. Mm-hmm. And that because they're not making it, my argument has been that because they're not making their own software, and then when they do make their own software, it's just me too crap that doesn't need to exist in any shape, manner, or fashion, because they're just tacking it on top of a tacky operating system to begin with. Right?
So is there any place in the Android market space that you can think of where Samsung is bringing something unique?
Little things. Samsung was the first company to have success with big screens. But, you know, that was like one of 70,000 things that they threw at the wall and, you know, watched it drip a little bit slower than everything else.
So in that respect, are you saying that Samsung contributed to the overall smartphone and tablet space?
No, I'm saying that they got lucky
as opposed to by design.
They got lucky. I mean, Samsung's Android devices were distant. You know, the Galaxy line was distant before I think it was the Galaxy S3 that was the first big one. Is that right? Does that sound right?
The
Galaxy S. I don't know, whichever one. Samsung got lucky. It propelled them to the top of the Android world. But I've been arguing for a couple of years now that they just happen to be the company that's on top now. If they go away, some other company is going to rise to the top. I mean, Android is going to maintain a certain level of market share. You know, they might have some give or take with Apple, but Apple is largely competing at the top of the smartphone space in the first place. And that, you know, I mean, in reality, I think that HTC has been making better Android devices for years. They just don't have
Samsung's market pull.
Right. And it's because HTC was not first to market. I think it's probably because HTC was not first to market with a large screen Android device. And what we've been seeing since the Note 7 debacle is that Samsung's smartphone empire has been crumbling. Like I saw some numbers recently that Apple took 92%. You know, for a while, Apple's profit share in the smartphone space was down to like 70%, which is, of course, still just astronomical.
Yes.
But it's back up to 92%. And I think that Apple had top market share in the fourth quarter in the U.S. at least. And we're seeing Samsung's sales tank because of this fire debacle. This fire debacle was entirely self-imposed and self-inflicted. Mm-hmm. And Samsung's management of that problem was a self-inflicted mess. And the travel bans on on Samsung devices have been
you
the
can't
thing.
Like buy publicity not, like that.
You can't. You just can't. You know, airlines not letting a Samsung device, and like it was like any Samsung device. You couldn't have them on for a while. I don't know if that's still the case, to be honest. It didn't need to be every Samsung device, but the airlines were overreacting because they didn't want their people to be in the position of having to identify which particular Samsung model was being turned on.
That the FAA was imposing the flight ban on the Note 7. And then airlines, how could you expect them to be able to identify every single model of Samsung device?
Especially when there are 70,000 frickin' models, because that's something that Samsung does.
Right. So then the airlines, their response was, well, we can't figure out how to single out the right device. So if you have a Samsung logo, we just need you to shut it off.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. So, I mean, you know, this kind of messaging is, I mean, no one cares. Like as an ancillary point of the fact that Samsung has delusions of software relevance, no one cares about Samsung as a platform. Like, you know, people aren't saying, hey, yeah, can you have me my Samsung so I can make a, so I can make a call?
No one was doing that. There are people that when they're talking about smartphones, they use the term iPhone in lieu of smartphone.
Yes, one's doing that with Samsung.
Right. Yeah. They'll say I'll have the Samsung iPhone.
Have you encountered?
Yep. I've absolutely encountered that many times.
Really? Yep. Seriously?
Yep.
Okay. That's just weird.
But the point is that when people think of a smartphone platform, they think iPhone. So they think of iPhone as the platform for all smartphones, and they're just buying their Samsung phone, and in their mind, it's all the same. That's how much mind share Apple has in this space.
Apple does have a lot of mind share. It's true. And Samsung, there are definitely people who at one point wanted Samsung devices for sure, but it still doesn't mean that they care about the brand. Very few people are invested in the Samsung brand. I'm sure that there are some exceptions out there. But as a rule of thumb, I think that's probably a fairly safe statement. No one was caring about Samsung devices per se. No one's going to care. And so now you have this PR disaster that has been Samsung's battery issue. Again, self-inflicted because they were trying to steal a march on Apple and took shortcuts. And turns out when you take shortcuts, there are problems.
Yep.
Right? And
it can blow up in your face or your car.
Or on your nightstand.
Or your nightstand.
And now they had a battery factory catch fire with 110 firefighters. Oh my goodness, 19 trucks.
Mm-hmm.
Oh goodness.
But it was a minor fire.
Yeah, so the point is it's possible also that Samsung could recover from this and regain its momentum. That is possible. But I think that what we are seeing is the proof in my original pudding thesis. My pudding thesis.
Oh my God, I love that. Hello, would you like to try my pudding thesis? I actually holding a plate up to you with pudding
thesis. I love your voices recently. This is good stuff.
Oh, thank you.
Keep that coming. But so the proof of my original pudding thesis that Samsung doesn't matter and that their empire is crumbling. I think that Google is capitalizing on that. I think that Apple has actually capitalized on that. And I would imagine that Xiaomi and HTC and Huawei, or one of the other Chinese companies is going to be able to step it up and continue to take more space, more share from them in the Android space.
Yep, could be. And I would like to see another company have a crack at that top spot in the Android space, because I'd like to see what other companies can do to really excel.
Well, and you know, but keep in mind that OEMs in the Android space don't really matter. That's the whole point. They don't really matter. They're just making hardware to wrap around Google's Android operating system. So none of them matter. I mean, give me a whole widget device. I guess really that's my bias.
You know, Google's trying to do that. And
Google is sort of trying to do that because they're still working with OEMs to do their stuff.
Yeah, well, so they're working on making their own thing happen also. But yes, they're doing the OEM thing. But, you know, what if like HTC was able to just run with the latest totally untethered version of Android like Google is doing with their OEM devices, and they just ran with it and really, really tried to innovate so they weren't just slapping together hardware and putting Android on top of it. I mean, what if they used Android as a platform to really come up with some innovative new things? I would love that.
Yeah, I'd love that. Yeah, whatever. That ain't going to happen. Whatever.
Well, okay. It needs to happen because Apple needs to have that serious competition so that they make the next iPhone even crazy awesome better. And I don't think that kind of competition is there.
I just heard from one of my Apple friends, by the way. I've been talking to him about getting some dinner. Oh, just pinged me just now. I'm very excited. I'm going to have dinner with him next week.
Oh, great. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. So I was trying to explain why it is that I seemed checked out for a moment. It's largely, and I'm being mostly pedantic, because I was checked out for a moment.
Yeah, how about that?
All right. We're out of time.
Yeah, we really are out of time.
We're really out of time. I guess we're going to thank Blue Apron for sponsoring us. Go to blueapron.com/ACM. Please understand, they're helping to pay the bills here. They're helping us to bring you these podcasts and the content that we write. And we appreciate them, and we'd love it if you showed them some appreciation too. 3 free meals on your first order.
What's that URL?
blueapron.com/ACM.
Awesome.
Yep. That's all you have to do. That's all. You just go there.
Just go there. And, just go there. Yeah. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com, and feel free to talk over our little outro bumper just like we do.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom. Recorded for TMO only. That's all for this week.
You are so weird. Oh, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
We are so cutting sugar out of your diet.
That'd be a good thing.